We sang a song earlier, which we talked about ancient words. Each Sunday, we stand here, we gather together in church, and we read from our Bible, what we call the Scripture. And these are words that were written thousands of years ago. These from Paul, written probably 40, 50 AD. So almost 2,000 years ago. Some in our Old Testament are much older than that. But we believe in those, there's truth in them. There's something that they have to say to us. So for the last few weeks, we've been going through what we call in our Bible, 1 Corinthians. It's a letter from a man named Paul. He was an early follower of Jesus who had a radical encounter with Jesus and then began to travel around the Mediterranean teaching people about Jesus and what it means to follow him. The letter is to a church in a city called Corinth on the Greek peninsula. And he had visited there previously, had at least some previous correspondence, which we don't have. And he's writing to them about what it looks like to follow Jesus. The early part of the letter, he is writing to them about some things he's heard about, some problems with divisions, some schisms that are going on, and the importance of living a life that looks like Jesus. In the section that we started today, and it's part of chapter 7, Teresa read just a small portion of that, he's responding to questions they have. Questions in particular about relationships, about being married and about being single, about sexuality, lots of different things. And so Paul is responding, and in his response, he offers some theological as well as pastoral reflections. One scholar refers to Paul, he likes to call him Pastor Paul. We think of him sometimes as traveling evangelist apostle, but he's also a pastor. He cares for churches, he cares for people, and he has words to say to them. And the words that we heard are a part of that. And so he's reflecting on, in particular, this passage, marriage and singleness, as well as more generally what it looks like to serve God. And so we read just a part of chapter 7. And so the bigger picture, he has a lot to say about marriage. Now, what he says here about marriage isn't the only thing that we can find in our Bible about marriage. And marriage is a complex, what the Bible has to say about marriage is complex. Lots of different ways of looking at it. But I want to highlight just a few of the basic things that he gets to. One is, I think what Paul is saying in this is that marriage is between a man and a woman. As you notice, as he was talking, and if you read the broader, all of chapter 7, or what we call chapter 7, it's all talk of a marriage between a husband and wife. And as we look through the rest of Scripture, that's the generally assumed way of saying that. Marriage, when writers in the Bible talk about marriage, they're saying marriage is one man, one woman together. That's the first thing. The other thing he talks about is there's a mutuality in marriage. In other words, you're for one another. So at the beginning of chapter 7, beginning verse 3, it says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. Do you see how that? It's one and the other. It's not just one fulfilling the duty, but it's both. And then he goes on, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. They go, okay, he yields it, but in the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. So who has control? I mean, there's this mutuality going on that marriage is not an issue of power or control where one is over the other. And so something is going on. And so as Paul's talking about marriage, we keep that in mind. Something else he says about marriage, he says, to the married, I give this command, not I, but the Lord. A wife must not separate from her husband, but if she does, she must remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband, and a husband must not divorce his wife. In other words, what Paul is getting at is the biblical ideal, or God's ideal, I should say, is for marriage to be a lifelong commitment and a lifelong covenant. Again, there are lots of passages, and there's nuances about what that looks like, and concessions that God makes for hardness of hearts and other issues. But what we begin with, and what Paul begins with, is this is the ideal. When God speaks of marriage, it's one man, one woman in a lifelong commitment or a lifelong covenant. And so we kind of start there. But what Paul talks about is not just marriage, but also singleness. And in particular, kind of the big word, celibate singleness. In other words, sex is reserved for marriage. So he's talking about singleness and that. And what does he say about singleness? This is fascinating. He says, I wish that you, all of you, were as I am. And he goes on, he says, what is he like? He's single. But each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. So everybody has a gift. And then he goes on, he explains what it is. He said, now to the married, unmarried, and the widows, I say, it is good for them to stay unmarried as I do. So he's saying what? He's saying that there's marriage and there's singleness. Both are gifts from God. And one is not less than. In other words, one does not have to be married to be a complete Christian or to serve. In my years of serving as a pastor, lots of colleagues, folks I went to seminary with, other pastors I've met, and I've had interesting conversations over the years. And I remember at least one with a pastor I know that we were in, Christine and I went to seminary with, who's single. And he talks about sometimes having gone to churches to interview, to serve as a pastor, and there he could sense either implicitly or sometimes explicitly their doubts about him serving as a pastor because he was not married. Sometimes they're like, well, you just wouldn't understand. How would you deal with married people if you're not married? Which is just a ridiculous argument on its face. Because the reality is, there is only one life I truly understand, and that's mine. And I don't even fully understand that all the time. I don't have to be married to understand some things about marriage. I don't have to have kids to understand everything about kids. Half of you are women. I'm not a woman. So does that mean I can't serve as your pastor because I'm not a woman? But sometimes in the church, we've created this picture where the ideal is marriage, and only someone who's married is truly improper. And it applies not only to pastors, but oftentimes it applies to others within the congregation. And it happens again in explicit and implicit ways, in subtle ways, where oftentimes for young folks, young person comes to the church. They're wondering, and questions are often asked by people part of the church. Well, are you married? When are you going to get married? Do you have a boyfriend? Let me introduce you, because I've got a cousin, I've got a nephew, I've got a grandson. He'd be great for you. What is going on? What's the implicit message going on? That somehow if you're not married, you're lacking something. That if you're not married, you can't be fully a part of it. Churches suffer from this all the time. We have all kinds of ministries for married folks, but then the single folks kind of get shuffled off to like another, like, oh, well, there's this other marriage, this other ministry for single folks, which some churches basically becomes the place to meet someone to get married. In fact, I was a part of a church where exactly that happened. We had a ministry, and we had these Sunday school classes, and I had at least one person in the congregation decide they want to go to a different church because our singles ministry was too small and there just wasn't a big enough pool to date from. But what's going on here is this subtle hierarchy, this subtle tiering that's going on where it says, well, there's married people and then there's single people, which is exactly the opposite, in fact, of what Paul says. Paul, in fact, says being single is better. I'm going to put that in air quotes, but being single is better. Note, this does not mean that marriage is not good. But when he's talking about relationships, he wants us to be clear. He wants the Corinthians, this church that lived in a world of sexual promiscuity and all kinds of things. He's saying that marriage and singleness are both good gifts from God. One is not better than the other. And we're going to come back to this idea of not being good. And so how does he say it's better? Why is it better in Paul's mind? Or why does he make this argument it's better? In this part, he says, I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife. And his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affair. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. He says, I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you. Again, here's that kind of that pastoral sense, but that you may live in a right way in undevoted devotion to the Lord. His main point is what? That we avoid whatever distracts us from service to Jesus. And he makes the point, if you're married, you have a lot of things to worry about. all kinds of things to take care of. When you have a new baby, there's all kinds of things to worry about and think about, right? When you have a spouse, there's all kinds of, if you're single, a lot of those distractions go away. He says, so that allows you, in some sense, when you're single, to serve God better because you're not distracted, which is, you kind of say, really, Paul? I mean, I would never refer to my wife as a distraction. At least not for very long, right? But the bigger point is, but what are we saying when we say that? It says, yeah, because I have a family, I spend time with them because I want to, because they need me, because I'm helping them, doing all sorts of things, which means that gives a little less time for some other things. Is that bad? No. Paul's not saying it's bad. He's simply pointing to a reality that when you're married, when you have a family, you have other things to consider. And what he's getting at is that we need to be focused on devotion to Jesus. And that marriage could potentially, or family could potentially serve. But he says those aren't, in fact, the only ones. He says, what I mean, brothers and sisters, the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. Those who mourn as if they did not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if they were not theirs to keep. In other words, there are a lot of things that could distract us. It could be our material possessions. It could be all sorts of good. Those who use the things of this world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. In other words, there are all sorts of things that can distract us. And as he's talking about relationships, he's saying, those are potentially distracting as well as our material goods. Caring for a house, taking care of a car, a boat, our snowmobile, our crafts, or all sorts of different things are possible distractions. So if we go back to it, is he saying that it's bad to get married? No. So I want to be clear. When you walk out, Pastor Carl is not saying being married is bad or don't get married. In fact, back in verse 7, he said, it's a gift. I wish all of you were as I am. But each of you has your own gift from God. In other words, those who are single and those who are married, both are gifts from God. One has this gift, one other has this one. And so as he's thinking about that, I want to think about the broader principle. So he begins with that level, that principle of saying marriage and singleness are both gifts from God. Both are to be honored. Both are to be respected. Both are ways in which we can serve God. But what he's getting at is the most important thing is devotion to Jesus. What he's inviting them to say is like, avoid whatever might distract you from that. And so as he talks about this world passing away or undivided devotion, he's saying there's a call for focus. In other words, when Jesus invites us to follow him, we're following him, that needs to be our primary devotion, primary thing. And we need to avoid anything else that might distract us from that. Our world is filled with things that might take that away. And so he's pointing us to that. And he's also saying something about the circumstances that we're in. And if we think about it, he's saying, you're single, he's single, but he's talking about married folks. But he also talks later on, down near the end of chapter 7, he talks about those who are widows. Those who are grieving. And essentially, and as well as those who a husband has left, he talks about couples where one's a Christian and the other's not. And what he says is that in whatever circumstances we find ourselves, no matter what circumstances we're in, each is an opportunity to serve Jesus. Married, single, divorced, widowed, grieving, whatever it is, everyone is an opportunity to serve Jesus. And I think what he might be getting at is there's a temptation sometimes to think, well, if only I were in a different circumstance. If only my life were a little bit different, then I could serve Jesus. And what Paul is saying is we can serve Jesus in whatever our life circumstances are. I might expand that to no matter what stage of life we're in. No matter what our gifts or talents, we have the ability to serve Jesus. Now, it's going to look different for everybody. There are phases of life. There are different things. what you're capable of doing when you're 28 is very different from what you're capable of doing when you're 98. That's just a reality of life. Or there are seasons of life where you have just a lot going on. Maybe it's a season of life where work is just overwhelming and you're working 80 or 90 hours a week. Maybe it's a season of life where you have young children at home and there are all these things going on. And Paul is saying that you can serve Jesus in every one of those circumstances. The service may look different, but what he's inviting to is make the most of the current situation. Instead of simply saying what we often do, well, if only my life were a little different, if only I did, he's saying, no, whatever circumstance you're in, whatever is going on in your life now, you can serve Jesus. Now, for those of us sitting in this room, every one of us is in a different place in life for lots of different reasons. How old we are, our emotional health, our physical health, all of those affect that. So we can't look to another person and say, wow, they're not serving Jesus like I would. Well, no, they're not serving like you because they're not you and you're not them. But it's an invitation to say, how can I serve Jesus where I am? But in the midst of that, there is a tension that's going on. And this is the tension that Paul gets to in the midst of this covenant. The first is, what I'm saying here is serve God in whatever circumstances you find yourself. But there's also this call to seek to place ourselves in a situation that involves the least distraction and allows you to serve. So I'll give an example. Back in chapter 7, verse 8, he says, now to the unmarried and the widows I say, it is good for them to stay unmarried, as I do. But if they cannot control themselves, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. He's saying, well, there's different ways to do. Serve whatever you are, but then he's saying, but if that circumstance doesn't work, it's okay to go into a different one sometimes. And I think why this is hard for some of us, and I know for me, growing up and being around the church for a long time, there was often a sense, again, sometimes implied, sometimes explicit in teaching, that there's one right choice. That there's this plan, well, you have to do this one thing in order to serve God. But Paul says here, well, you can be single or get married, in both cases serve God. Say, if you're single, stay single, but if that's too hard, then you can get married. And both are good. Paul doesn't say, well, that's the only way. If you're single and you choose to get married, well, you're sinning and you're out of the church. That's not at all what he says. We tend to think in this binary of this is the right way and this is the wrong way, that you can only serve God if A, not B. And Paul is saying there are different ways, and sometimes we have to use discernment. We have to make a choice. And God doesn't say you can only serve in this way. He points to the difference in saying you can do both. There's not one, and again, I'm going to use air quotes, one right choice. And this is where, as I said, Paul is a theologian and a pastor. He's a theologian and he develops deep theology about what it means to serve God and what human relationships look like. But he's also a pastor in the sense of saying, I recognize that we all are in different places, that we all have different personalities, different strengths and weaknesses. And within that, there is a flexibility. There's an ability to say, this is what's right, but there's also this option. And so what I want us to see in this is, Paul says there are multiple different good ways to serve God. We could take it from relationships. We could take it sometimes to vocational ministry. There are different ways to serve God. There are some who feel called into vocation, what I call vocational full-time ministry, whether as pastors, as Bible translators, as missionaries. But that's not greater or less than other types of Christian service. There are different ways to serve God, and each one is right, and sometimes we switch from one to the other. And so what Paul is inviting us to do is to say, in whatever circumstance, and he's talking here in terms of relationship, but whatever circumstance we're in, there are options and there are choices. And what we're asking is, once we've chosen a path, how do we respond? But the ultimate is, what's the best way for me to serve God? What way can I serve that is going to least distract me? What way can I serve God that is going to allow me best to focus on my devotion to Jesus? I can't answer that for all of you. I don't have a magic button, a magic set of glasses, some way to see like, oh, here's the best way for you to serve. Here's the best way. This is what you should be doing. I'm happy to have conversations and talk, but ultimately it's God and His Spirit that will direct you to that best path. And I even hesitate to use best path, maybe better path. But again, it's never a matter of saying one is right and one is wrong. There may be a better way, but it doesn't necessarily mean the better way is right and the other way is wrong. And so what he talks about, he's like, well, it's better to stay single, but it's okay to be married. He doesn't say it's bad to be married. He's simply in this case, and he's pointing to particular circumstances, again, complicated, better circumstances. It's better to be single. Why? Because of your ability to be devoted to the Lord. But if it's too hard for you to stay single, then get married and you can serve God there. We sometimes want our Bible to have this clear, like, here's the answer. If A, then B. I mean, I grew up, I studied math and I was an engineer in college. I like formulas because formulas are easy. If you use the right formula, you always get the right answer. Unless you mess up the math. But the point is, there's a formula and you follow the formula and things work out. Life is not a formula. God doesn't offer formulas. He offers a way of doing things and says, this is one way and this is another, and both can be proper ways to serve God. And so what I want us to hear in that is, all of us can serve God no matter what circumstance we're in. All of us can serve God because He's called all of us. And one of the questions is, once we've chosen a path, we can look and we can say, how do I respond to God in this particular path I've chosen? So let's think back kind of key points as we think about doing. One is, in marriage, there's a mutuality. It's a for the other. This is that cross-shaped. There's not a hierarchy. There's not a status of power, but it's a one for the other. Second thing is, singleness and marriage are both gifts and both to be honored. I think this is such an important lesson for us to learn in the church, is that both singleness and marriage are gifts from God and both are to be honored as paths to live and to serve God. Neither one is greater or lesser. More generally, you can serve God wherever you are. Whatever your life circumstances, you can serve God. And there are multiple options that are good. But what matters most is devotion to Jesus. What matters most is devotion to Jesus. And if we can take away kind of one key thing is, we avoid whatever may distract us. Whatever way of living least distracts you from serving Jesus. Whether that's singleness or marriage or the kind of goods, the place you live, the kind of things you have, the money you make, all those things can possibly serve as distractions. And so what you ask yourself is, what's the thing that's going to distract me, and avoid that so that I can serve Jesus with all that I am and all that I have? And we do that because Jesus is the means and the goal of our salvation. Jesus is the one who gives us life. He's the one who invites us to follow. So the way to follow Him is to set aside the distractions. Paul here is talking about relationships and how those can be distracting. But he's ultimately saying, in our lives, the question to ask ourselves is, am I fully devoted to Jesus? And what in my life, in terms of my relationships, in terms of my job, in terms of things, is just potentially distracting for me? And what is the better way to live to minimize those distractions? Because here's the truth. We can't avoid distractions. We are naturally distracted people. There's always something out there catching our mind, catching our ideas, something to follow after. I know sometimes it's tempting, this is a little sidebar, it's tempting to blame this for our life of distraction. To say, oh, now that there's the internet and social media, we're so distracted. I would invite you to think back 20, 30 years, if you can go back that far. Some of you maybe not, so I can't go back quite as far. But before you had a smartphone, before there was Facebook, and you were sitting in a conversation with someone and they're talking, and how easy was it for, as someone else is talking to you all of a sudden be thinking about, I need milk from the store today. Or, I wonder, did I unplug the iron? Hey, it's Bob's birthday tomorrow. I need to get him a present. And all these things pop in our mind, and we're distracted because that's how our minds work. Phones and internet may magnify that. They may shape it in different ways. But we are naturally distracted people in the sense we're always thinking about lots of different things. And lots of things can pull our attention away. But the call of Jesus is to say, the focus of our lives should be on Jesus because he is the one who gave us life and gives us life. And so the invitation is to say, how can I live a life that minimizes those distractions in my relationships, in my goods, in the way I live? How can I live a life that minimizes those distractions so I can be fully devoted to Jesus? And that's what he's getting at here, where he's saying, talking about this idea of living a life that's fully devoted to who Jesus is. When he's saying, I'm saying this not for your own good, but that you may live a life in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. So I'd invite you this week to have a conversation with God. Say, where in my life, what's going on in my life, what's going on in the way I'm living that's dividing my attention, that's dividing my devotion? And then ask God to help you find ways to minimize those distractions, to move away from those things that are dividing your attention so that we can give our lives fully to Jesus because he is the one, the only one who's worthy of that devotion. As God, as the one who has given us life and is our life. So may we live lives of undevoted devotion. May we live lives full of distraction as we seek to follow him. Amen.